Hello.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. How
You're
about me?
yes.
I
Everything's
sound okay?
copacetic. Yes, you sound beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
Your vocals are aging well.
Oh, thank you. I do throat exercises.
Maybe we could treat us to a song.
At first, I was afraid, I was petrified.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, that is nice.
Nice, yeah.
You found your new calling.
Serenading other gentlemen over Skype.
Yeah. Yes,
That's
that's
right.
it. If there was only any
Actually,
money in it, that would be a good occupation.
yeah, I think I'd have to. I have to do a little bit more to make money that way.
Yeah, probably.
I can't do a backup this time because I'm actually using my phone.
Oh, okay. Are you not at home?
I am at home. My laptop cord, charger cord, got I don't know exactly what happened. I think it got caught in the metal part of the recliner.
Oh,
Oh.
and it ripped it out.
And it kind of, it didn't cut in half, but it cut through the insulation and messed up the wires, so it's not charging. But
Oh, God.
fortunately, a few months ago, I just decided to go ahead and pay to extend the warranty, and
Ah.
so I pretty much just got my money's worth. So I got a new charger coming tomorrow, I think.
Wow, I didn't know the warranty covered like destruction like that. Like with the external
Well,
pieces.
yeah, I don't know if the regular warranty covers accidents and stuff like that, but it's a HP, and I decided right before the 1 year warranty was up, I had an issue with it charging, and I ended up fixing it myself. I opened it up, and it turned out that the battery was just where the internal battery where it connects to the motherboard, the cord had come loose.
Yeah.
So I fixed that, but it also made me think, it's a pretty nice.
Yeah, tell
That's
him.
right.
It made you think that you're
That's
careless
why.
with your hardware. That's why I
Yeah.
translated it, the barking for you. Like,
I
you're dropping that
called
shit
up
all
and I
over the
said, and
place.
that's what I said. What are you doing? I know I asked you if you were going to podcast today, but. That's not what I meant, Mabel.
Oh
I thought
boy.
you had something nice to say. But yeah, so it made me think. I decided to go ahead and pay for their care pack,
Ah,
which
so
covers pretty much
you have
everything.
a recent laptop fairly recent then.
Yeah, I got it just like a little over a year ago.
Me and Rob were
A new
trying to
one.
guess how old ours were, and we had no idea.
Yeah.
They're hitting past a decade for sure.
Exactly.
But
Yeah, my old one was getting so slow, but
I will say that I'm impressed with Asus, like in terms of like hardware, like they put together a good laptop. It lasted over my Dells and my HPs and everything.
well, that's good.
And I usually order those like specialty. This one I just bought like a long time ago at Best Buy. It's been the best one I've had.
That's cool.
So
Yeah, that's
happy.
I have my desktop that I'm using,
Do
and
they
it's
still make
old.
those? That
My
says how
laptop
archaic.
is ancient compared to the desktop. So
Oh,
there's
wow.
no way that I would even try going. It takes forever just to get on, have anything work on the laptop at all.
I don't
I
know too
saw
many
it. You
people
actually
that.
have to turn a crank to get it to start.
I didn't know too many people have a desktop anymore.
I got my desktop here.
You build it yourself?
Desktops are still pretty good, or still pretty big, and
Gaming.
for gaming, I think, yeah.
Yeah, no, I did I build it? No, I bought it.
Do you
As is.
game on the computer?
When I bought it, I was planning on like playing some games on it or whatever, but I think that was far and few between. I think
most
some of the
gamers
games I was playing a
I
lot.
know have to keep upgrading, like
Oh
they have
yeah,
to,
I mean that's how it worked
because
before,
then
Mike.
the new game comes and it requires more RAM and more video and like it just
I used to
keeps
be a
on.
PC gamer more, but you know, as I got older and stuff, I kind of fell out of it. But that's what I remember is like, I mean, you would buy something, and I'd try to spend a little bit of extra money to get something that's pretty fresh, so it would last a little while. But yeah, I mean, like a year later, there are already like brand new games coming out all the time. But I don't use the PC for gaming at all. Basically, the only thing I use it for now is for our podcasts and for a comic base. That's it.
Did you renew your comic base?
I did.
Yeah, me too.
I always wait for the between Christmas and New Year's
Yeah,
sale.
same here.
I'll be really, really upset if all of a sudden one year comes along and he doesn't offer that
Yeah.
33% off.
You sound a little staticky, Rob.
Do I?
Yeah, I don't know if Chris is hearing the same, but
Yeah, I don't know if it was just me or.
you're
You know what?
you're You're crispy clear. I don't know if I am because I can't hear myself.
You guys
But
both sound great. Let me hang up and I'll try coming back on.
it sounds like your mic is a little like not plugged in all the way, or maybe.
Yeah, I'm gonna check it.
All
All right,
right.
hang on, I'll be back.
So how have you been, Chris?
I'm pretty good.
Did you have
Yeah.
break time during this couple weeks, or were you mostly working?
Sort of. Whereas last year I took the time in between Christmas and New Year off, this year I kind of spread it out and I took all the Fridays in December off. That was what was easier for Kara to do, so I did the same thing. And
Yeah, matched up
so,
the vacation schedules, so.
yeah, had a lot of short weeks in a row, but I worked a little bit between the holidays, but it's pretty quiet.
I could do that easily. Like go to a 4-day work week. I would love that. But not
Yeah,
work a
me too.
40 I not work 40 hours in 4 days. Like I don't want to do that. I want that extra 8-hour buffer.
I'm back. Is
Yeah.
it any different?
Yeah. Let's talk some more.
Well, what am I supposed to say?
Well, I don't
How was
know.
your holidays?
You
My
sound
ho
better.
yeah, I heard Chris saying that you had some short weeks. I had quite a few short weeks in December. I think every week in December I worked only either four or 3 days.
Ah.
Yeah. Does it sound okay?
Yes, you sound much better. I don't know what you did, but it's not as grainy.
I just unplugged it and plugged it in a different USB port and
Oh,
see if that
that
helped.
seems to have worked.
But
There you go.
do you guys, or Mike, do you remember the Swamp Thing McFarlane figure that was coming out?
Yeah, did you get it?
Yeah, so I pre-ordered it on Amazon. It came on
Yeah.
Friday.
Yeah.
Guess what? They sent me the plain gray unpainted version.
Oh shit.
Yeah, Stacy's at going to Kohl's on doing some errands. She's
Yeah, return
returning it.
to
Yeah,
yeah.
I'm sure it's more rare and stuff. I don't care. I don't care about any of that. I wanted the actual
Well, you could paint it
green Swamp Thing.
yourself.
Some people actually did. I saw that. I went online
Yeah.
and it seemed like a ton of people. Like I don't know if it's everyone that ordered from Amazon, but everyone got the plain gray unpainted one. And some people were displaying how they actually painted it
Well,
themselves.
I bet they're extravagant
Yeah.
because you it's not just like it has like he's sort of multicolored like
Yeah.
when he's drawn right, you know,
I
and
would like
colored right.
a blue, the blue version where like he was on some alien planet for a
Well,
couple
I like when
issues.
the vines are like brownish,
Yeah.
you know, and then he's green and there's like it's multiple tones of green, like there's darker green in some parts and lighter green in others.
Oh yeah, and mixed in with the brown and stuff. Yeah,
Yeah.
for sure.
Yeah, I was just
Rainbow Batman.
That's right. I don't know if I should reorder it or wait or what, because I have a feeling if I reorder it, I'm just going to get the same one again.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you saw that it was prevalent.
Yeah. If I was the only one complaining about it, then maybe it was just a fluke, but it doesn't seem like that's the case.
I've kind of decided I just can't do the toys anymore. I just, like, don't have any room.
Yeah, I get it. It's huge. The box is enormous.
Yeah.
He's got to stand 10 inches, I would say.
And that's why I didn't buy, like, I was into the Spawn and the Clown, the new Clown, was huge. And then the Violator is really big, too. And those are the two that I decided not to buy. But I bought all, like, the medieval Spawns and those characters, Gunslinger.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I love toys. I wish I had more space for them. But I just can't do it anymore.
Yeah, I've never cared for those unpainted ones either, really.
Mm-mm.
If I had talent, I would like them, you know, because a lot of people paint, like, role-playing figures and stuff like that.
Yeah, like the Warhammer.
Warhammer. Like, it gets, like, incredibly expensive because they buy, like, all these things of paint and they put, like, multiple layers of paint. I had a plumber working in my basement one time, and he was really big into the Warhammer. And he was telling me how expensive it is.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can only imagine.
Yeah, he loves it. I mean, everybody loves their things.
Yep.
Henry Cavill is in the
Warhammer.
And painting his own things. Yeah, he's been talking about it a lot when they've interviewed him for The Witcher.
I might learn to paint. I wouldn't mind learning to paint. I have no interest in gaming, like zero interest, and don't even have any interest to want to game. If I had the time, I just don't. If I went back to gaming, video games or anything, it would just be for football. That's it. Football, basketball, and baseball.
For video games, you're saying?
Yeah, anything. Oh, wow. Like I just have no interest.
Uh huh.
Ever since the controllers got past so many buttons, I stopped caring.
I definitely can understand that because to a lot of extent, that's how I felt. But after then, I started getting more into the PlayStation again. And
but you have kids, too.
I started playing.
I think if I had kids or I was with my niece and nephew, I think I would be into some level of gaming. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's all they want to do. Matter of fact, when we were in Breckenridge, he had brought his, I think it was Nintendo Switch. I don't know which game is what anymore. But it had a Fortnite.
Uh-huh.
And I played some Fortnite with him. So I did all right because I was in
one thing the kids have never played.
I was in the arena with a bunch of, it like ranks you how you know, how many people are playing and how you did, and I did all right for a rookie.
That's cool.
But like I had no desire to ever do it again.
Right. You were doing it because you were playing with them.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. I might grow in a fondness for it if it was around me enough, but I don't know. Right now I seem to be like in a streaming mode. I'm watching more stuff than actually reading, like incredible amount of stuff. Like I'm almost done with Cobra Kai already. We started it yesterday.
God, we haven't even started it yet.
We
Stacey
watched.
Wants to start it tonight.
We watched all three Karate Kid movies yesterday. All three, because we wanted to watch the third one because the one guy is in there in the new one. So we wanted to make sure we understood, you know, like all the little Easter eggs and stuff that might come in. So they had on E, I guess the station's E. They were playing like 24 hours of Karate Kid.
You didn't watch who was it? Was it Jaden Smith one?
Oh, that's right.
Oh yeah, I've seen that one. I have seen that one. That was
the Hillary Swank one.
That one
isn't it? I thought Hillary Swank was three.
Number three is the, like, when Ralph Macchio goes over to the dark side, and he tries to open a bonsai store, and they destroy the store, and he has to go to
Oh,
the
yeah.
cliff and get the bonsai. And those guys are there's a guy named Steak Snake that just laughs all the time, and he likes turning off the lights every time he comes into the store for no reason whatsoever. I don't. It's like I was just laughing at him. And then the main villain is Mike. Well, Mike is the guy that fights him, but then they have that sensitive ponytail guy with the black hair that's in the new season. So
Yeah, I have
that's
seen
three.
that, but
It really is the least memorable of the three, and the swank one I've never seen. So I know that one's on Netflix.
Yeah.
That's the only one that's on Netflix.
See, I thought I was gonna brag that I watched I think something like 9 movies on my, week or week and a half of vacation. But you watched 3 in 1 day.
Yeah, I wa well I most of my Chris like I had all these plans. I was gonna start the new Stephen King novel, which I did. I got like I don't know,
Which
50,
one?
50 pages in later.
Oh, okay, yep.
Yeah, it's another hard case crime. So
Yeah, I
I got
haven't
like
watched, read that
50
one.
pages into that one, and then I was bagging and boarding comics right before we left for Albuquerque, and I said I had listened to a podcast and somebody talked about Sex Education on Netflix, and it sounded interesting to me. Like it just some key words he said, like American pie and a couple of things that he threw out there, and I'm like, well, that sounds like it's for me. And I
You're
turned it
like, there
on.
might be something to this whole sex
Yeah.
thing.
Yeah, I might. So I like turned it on.
Gotta look into this.
And I kind of was watching from the corner of my eye as I was bagging and boarding, and then I stopped bagging and boarding, and I'm like, okay, that's one episode. And then I just like over the holidays, I watched all three seasons, and each episode is almost an hour. So
Yeah.
it was like 10, it was like almost like 30 hours of TV I watched on that break.
Well, good for you.
Yeah, I watched a lot of streaming stuff. I watched 8-Bit Christmas. That was kind of cool. That was on HBO Max. And some movie called Playing with Fire that has John Cena. And
Oh, okay.
that was really cheesy at the beginning, but like I really liked it at the end. It's like one of those feel good movies where one of those smoke jumpers, that puts out fires,
Oh,
rescues three kids, and they sort of become his family. That's the premise of it. But yeah, it's one of those movies that I'm not drawn to, but I knew my parents would like it. Not only because my dad's a fireman, but because they like movies like that, so I watched that with them. And I watched The Great White on Shudder, which I still don't watch it on TV because I can't cast it. But I did watch it on my iPad, and that was decent for a shark movie. It was my least favorite, but I'm a sucker for underwater shark movies.
We watched a variety. I watched a lot of older, horror movies on my own. We watched Ghostbusters Afterlife and Encanto is the new ones with the kids. So yeah, there was a lot. There was a lot going on.
Ghostbusters Afterlife was pretty good, huh?
Thought it was great. Yeah,
Yeah.
I mean, it hits so many of the same beats that, like, in terms of, the same thing coming back and all that, but didn't even make a difference because
It had
at
the
first,
retro, yeah, it leads
yeah,
up to the nostalgia of the franchise is what the where
it
the
did.
magic is. That's where the magic is.
But even at the as we moved along through the movie, I'm like, oh, it's cool. Each seems like, each cast member's from the original is having a little like cameo, and that's cool. Annie Potts was at the, and then Dan Aykroyd had that little cameo at the shop
The
and stuff
whole
like
thing
that.
though was Harold Ramis, really,
Right.
like a tribute to him, which I thought was pretty amazing.
But I was.
I never realized
I
that
didn't know if it was only going to be like just these little cameos for each one of them. So I was very pleasantly surprised, you know, at the end.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's more than just a little cameo. So that was pretty cool.
One thing I thought was good from a casting perspective is I thought the kids that they cast for the boy and girl were like perfect for the role because of the look and the way they acted. Like, you could see them as descendants of him, you know?
Yes. And
just
girl,
the crazy
she's
hair.
Like, she's in, well, it's not that she's in everything. She's in a lot of things that I liked. Like, the first time I saw her, she was in The Haunting of Hill House, that Netflix series.
Yeah.
As one of the kids. And I can't remember. I've seen her like three or four other things. And they're always like right up my alley in terms of the stuff. She's a good young actress.
Yeah, she kind of sort of made that movie, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
In terms of just getting into the role and making you like a character, like she was she was the main character to like.
Yep. And I mean, I got, you know, it was really almost like choked up when like the three Ghostbusters plus her were the four with it. I'm like, they're all back, like, you know, all of them are back. Like, you know, she's obviously his descendant. So it's like, it was so cool. It was very touching.
I thought you were going to say you're choked up with podcasts because you're a podcaster.
That's right.
And he has one listener just like us. So there
that's
you
right.
go. Yeah.
No, it was good though. I enjoyed myself.
Yeah, I saw Spider-Man too. I don't want to say anything about it, but
you finally went, huh?
I finally went by myself because the only reason I went to go see it is I had Wednesday off and Barb didn't of this past week, and she wanted to hit silver status on our movie club membership, and we needed one more ticket to go to, and I didn't really care, but she wanted to because the discount level is greater, you know, like for popcorn and tickets and everything, plus we get two free tickets. So she's like, you should just go. And I didn't tell her anything about it, but I was pretty good. Matter of fact, I haven't spoken anything about it, but it was really good. I liked it. I was impressed.
A lot of people are saying it was good, so I'm looking forward to seeing it. I don't know when that will be, but
I was spoiled with a lot, though, so I think it had affected my enjoyment because of all the memes and shit that I see coming across. It kind of took some of the surprises out of the movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's too bad. I haven't heard anything about it, so.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you managed to avoid spoilers. That's good, though.
Yeah, for sure.
I didn't avoid them.
I don't know how I've avoided them. I still know nothing about the movie except for what I've seen, like in the trailer. I know that Doctor Strange is in it, and it has something to do with.
Well, I listen
like,
to a lot
want
of
everyone to know that he's Peter Parker.
Yeah, I listen to Speculator podcasts too, and a lot of that is predicting what's going to be in it, like ahead of time. And a lot of the predictions were sort of true, so my mind already. Had sort of knew certain things were going to happen based on looking at speculation of comic books. Do you know what I mean?
Gotcha.
So it's like, yeah.
That's cool, though. I'm glad you got to see it. I know you've been trying.
I think we might try again tomorrow. We're waiting to see what the theater looks like tomorrow because we got our first, like, snowfall. Yesterday
we had one last night.
Yeah, it was like a -9 most of the day. It was freezing. Like we didn't leave the house at all. That's why we did the Karate Kid marathon. And today it's not going to be much warmer, but we do get to the 40s. But like I haven't taken Harley out just because it's too cold.
Yeah.
But today I might try to get out there and take her for a short walk at least.
Chris, how much snow did you get? Was it just a little bit? But
it doesn't look like a lot, really.
Yeah, it's just all stuck to the roads and stuff. And It looks like they're just starting to clear it out in my area now off the roads.
Yeah, I don't even know what our roads look like. I just see my front yard and backyard so far. And I shoveled snow yesterday, so. But it was really like bad luck because we needed this snowstorm like days earlier or on the day of those fires because like we're talking like 700 homes and this one hit close to home because usually the fires are in the foresty areas and we're not in it. But this fire was like taking out targets. I mean, it was like in towns, like where people are, where houses are everywhere.
That's crazy.
It was not started in a forest. It was a power line that dropped because of the winds. Like we've been, like the weather's just been nuts. Like we've been getting high winds, but no moisture. And when high winds just sparked up that fire and losing power and a lot of people just lost their homes. As a matter of fact, my brother knows one of his workers lost their home and their rental. Like they had two homes. They had one home they bought, and then the other home. Well, I don't know if they owned it, but they were paying on it, and then the other one they were renting out, and both of them were destroyed.
Wow.
So yeah, it was. I mean, imagine how going from having assets to having nothing.
I know.
And in a COVID situation, where the COVID numbers are through the roof. A matter of fact, I was listening to Brightside chat, and one of the guys has COVID, and the other guy sounded like he has COVID, but he didn't get tested. And then I've been hearing a lot of podcasters getting sick, like getting COVID.
Yeah, I'm just hearing person after person now that like. I wish one of my old friends from high school, actually, he lives down in Atlanta. I wished him, you know, happy birthday the other day. And he's like, I'm just going to be lying in bed. I've got COVID. My parents have been over since Christmas Day. My dad they all got tested. My dad has it now, too. They're all triple vaccinated, but it's the Omicron. And one of my friend's dads, he's got it. He's a huge anti-vaxxer, but he seems like he's okay. But you know, I mean, it feels like it's scary. It feels like it's inevitable.
No, but you lose your house. You have this virus going on. You have the financial situation going on where like a lot of the houses that are being built can't keep a schedule because they're losing contractors left and right. They're quitting work for other jobs.
Really?
For higher paying jobs. Yeah. So they can't build it, and then you got the material problems. So even if these guys did get their insurance money and got their, you know, ready to build, who knows when they'd get to it. Do you know what I mean? Like, they might be without a house for years.
Well, that's a good point. Even with the insurance money, like what type of money are they giving out? Are they giving out what it was valued, and now because of the rates and the cost of materials and stuff, it's going to be so much more that now you're on the hook for? I don't know,
but it's like life changing, like devastating to so many people. Yeah. And we had our own incident because my wife works like they're building a new Amazon.
And yes, we had bought
a 2020, 2022 Honda CRV and it's a hybrid and all. And she took it to work and like a pallet blew and like hit the back end of it.
Oh no.
So it like dented the, you know, the rear panel plus the panel that's over the tire. So we already had to make a claim on that, but we decided to take the car to New Mexico. And, on Christmas Day, when we were getting to leave from her mom's, we got in the car and we shut the doors like almost near each other, and the whole back windshield just shattered into a billion pieces. It just went,
what the hell?
Well, it probably had damage from that pallet, and we just didn't see it because it like shifted things around. And then by closing the doors like we did, it had a vacuum of pressure inside the car. and just shattered. I mean, it like literally blew out the entire windshield.
So
It was like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, you know, where, you know, Steve Martin looks at John Candy. I like closed my door first, and I heard, tsh, and I look over to Barb, and then she closes her door, and it goes, psh, and it's like we look over to each other, and then looked in the back, and we're like, holy shit, we just lost our
Unbelievable.
window. And then
Now,
we have the supply problem, right? So we don't know when we can get parts for Honda. So the company already has our car in hostage state. It could be anywhere from a month to 3 months, maybe longer.
Mike, so does she knows that it was from a pallet flying across from
Well,
Amazon?
we think it's because they're building there, like.
Yeah.
We don't know exactly where it came from. It could have come from somebody's yard for all we know,
Gotcha.
but it
Yeah.
just
'Cause it's
coincidentally they
too
have
bad you
all this
didn't have
building
like visual
material.
proof that you could, you know, actually go to them and have them pay
Yeah.
for it rather than it be on your insurance.
Yeah, and then again, it's like, how do you prove it? It's
Well,
not
that's
labeled Amazon, and it's
exactly. Yeah,
all you could
exactly.
do is take pictures and say, you guys have all this construction going on. You did it, and who would
And
have
then is
guessed
it
that there'd
more
be
trouble than it's worth to do all that?
95 mile an hour winds? I mean, the insurance on a new car covers it pretty much. You just have your deductible. The thing that we have is we didn't have the rental car agreement, so it takes our vehicle out of commission for a long time.
Exactly.
Yeah, I wish we would have had that. I canceled it a couple years ago because we had like the Honda agreement, but all that covers is if you have the car in their shop, you know, under warranty or whatever. It doesn't cover if you have structural damage due to an accident or anything
Yeah.
like that.
Oh.
Yeah, so yeah,
Wow.
it's
A lot of fun, huh?
yeah, it was exciting. Other than that, it was a pretty good Christmas. It was pretty laid back. We didn't see a lot of people because of the COVID, but I did see my aunt and uncle, and of course Barb's parents and my parents a lot. I just know I want to retire and
Oh, every time I have a vacation, it's like, yeah, I would love to. Don't tell me I'm gonna get bored. I'm not gonna get bored.
I have friends that like hate their in-laws and or they're happy to go back to work, you know, like it whatever situation they're in, they were in torture and they want to go back to work. I'm the complete opposite. I'm like I enjoy everything and I don't want to go back to work, you know.
I'm with you.
Yeah, I always find it, I mean, you know, it's interesting for people that they don't really know what to do with themselves without a job, you know. They don't really want to retire because, you know, they enjoy what they do and they, which is totally fine.
That's
It's great,
yeah,
you
great.
know.
Good
It's
for them.
nothing
I
wrong
don't
with
know if
it,
they enjoy what they do, but they hate it worse at home.
Well, yeah, some
For
people.
various reasons, their marriage or whatever is so bad that they'd rather be
Yeah.
away.
You got
Wh
people
which
like
is
that
nothing to
too, but
laugh at. It's that's not a good situation to be in, but
no.
yeah.
No, there's that as well, but yeah, either way, I always think like you guys, I have no trouble keeping myself busy. I've got more interests than I have time for, so I'd
Yeah.
be happy to I could retire now and I'd keep myself busy for the rest of my life.
Yeah, and it just gets worse with me. Like, I'm like counting the years because I came back from the holiday. I had to work on Thursday, and I was reading all my emails because there's a ton of them. And one of the testers I worked with died, and I'm like, holy shit, he just retired. Like a year ago, and now he's dead. So I went to the test lead because he was, it was like a graveyard at work, but the test lead was working. I'm like, what the hell happened? And he said he retired, you know, to enjoy his retirement. And then 6 months after retirement, found out he had stage 4 cancer.
Oh my
And then he
God.
just died over the holidays. And I'm like, God damn, I do not want that to be me so bad. I mean, you can never guess what's going to happen to you.
No.
You could get in a car
No.
accident or whatever. But I want, I've worked so goddamn hard my entire life since I was 14, and I want to enjoy a retirement. Even if it's like 5 years, I want that to be 5 years of good health. I don't want to retire and die. I do not want that.
Well, that's the thing. You work all your life, and then finally you get, hopefully, to enjoy a retirement. And then these poor people that you hear that retire in. I mean, I've had the same thing where it has. I mean, they barely retired for a year and they pass away.
Yeah.
And it's, yeah, it's like, oh my God, it just, it scares me because I'm like, no, I don't. You have no control over it, but you just don't want that to happen. You just don't want that to happen.
Plus, there was like a study in the field that I'm in, like 10 years ago, maybe it was longer, 15 years ago. And I remember reading the study, and it was like, in my field, when people retire at age, what their longevity is statistically after that retirement.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just not good. It's like statistically, a lot of people in my field retire and die like pretty early.
Why? Why would that? Why
I
would
don't
that
know.
Have...
Do you think it's like because it's sedentary work?
Yeah, it could be toilets or whatever, but cleaning. But it's the statistically. Not good. I don't want to say what my field is, but it's just not good. And I don't want to be one of those bad statistics.
No, so. I don't blame you at all. That's exactly how I feel. And it's like, I know I can't retire like early, but like my dad worked for the phone company. It was literally New York Tel, and it became other companies, including then Verizon, which it is today. But like, you know, they would start offering him packages, and he was also on the union side, so of course he had a pension and all that, and they, you know, paid out all this extra money. He ended up retiring early, and he absolutely, like, you know, I mean, he's like I am. He worked, and like you guys are, he worked because obviously you need an income to be able to enjoy things, you know, in life. And to provide, you know, for your family and stuff. And I mean, that's why he did it. He didn't like love his job, but it was fine. And so he's, you know, enjoyed himself immensely. And he's had all these years, like 20 going 21 years now, you know, since he's been retired, and just loved it, you know?
Yeah. Most of the people that I know that really take advantage of retirement either work for the city or work for the state, because they have really good packages. Like, they might not get paid as much salary, but their after retirement benefit is fantastic in terms of like healthcare and all that stuff. It's like they got it all squared away. They don't have to worry about that shit.
Yeah. I think if you get some sort of, even if you don't have a pension, if you walk away with a healthcare package into retirement, that's a huge thing that you don't have to worry about. And you know, Stacy works for the state now.
Yeah.
She has that, and she can cover me. And so I'm like, that's going to be fantastic for, you know, when we want to retire.
Yeah.
Not going to have to worry about that.
One of the guys that I just, that we hired on together, we started in 94, exactly the same time. We had the same degrees. We went down different paths. Like, I went down the software path, he went down the hardware path. But he retired just recently. And his new wife works for the state of Nevada, and she's getting ready to retire, so he's going to be under her benefits. But
yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, yeah. But he's retired at 55. Like, that's the dream. Mm-hmm. So
seriously, yeah.
He's had lots of tragedy though that I don't think anybody would want to go through. Because he lost his first wife to a degenerative disease, and she was sick for a long time, like a long time. So yeah, he went through hell, and he even told me, like, when I was in his office before the holidays, and he's like, he goes, "This retirement I kind of need, because," he goes, "to tell you the truth, my work ethic and everything has been dead since, my wife passed. Like, it's just been, I've been going through the motions and everything, but the motivation is just all gone." So
Yeah, I can understand that for sure.
yeah. But he's in a much better place now. He's off to do a lot of traveling, and I guess help his daughters move and stuff, but he's really stoked to retire.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
He just sounds like he deserves it.
Yeah. Emotionally too. Like he
Yep.
was he's ready from I mean, when we hired on together, we were always like, we want to work our years and then retire early. We both had the same motives, but we went different places. We ended up in the same place, which is weird. But for many, many years, we were down different paths. But yeah, it's crazy. And this has
It
been Retrocast. We hope you enjoyed
is.
it.
Yeah.
Happy New Year, everybody.
That's the podcast that lifts your spirits.
Yeah.
We're talking about, looking forward to retiring. That's a positive.
Yeah. I get so mad at list looking at solicits though, because there's so much I still want, but they're coming out with cooler shit now than they were months ago, and it drives me nuts. Marvel is just their collected editions are just all at once. I just don't get it. And then DC's doing the same. Like, they have that Phantom Stranger, which I
Who would have
want.
ever thought they'd release a Phantom Stranger omnibus?
Yeah, and the Question, like, they're coming out with some obscure stuff that, like, I really want that in a collected edition. Even though I can read it all digitally and I have all the comics, there's certain comics that are just like, they're special,
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that we've talked about it. We're try I'm trying to cut back, and it seems like I'm successfully cutting back on the single issues, because I entered those on my order, and I'm like, okay, this would have been a good month if it hadn't been for these three hardcovers. Then I add last is to see what my total is.
Yeah.
It's like,
Well, I
it's
was a
crazy.
sucker too, because I, for this podcast and DC everything else, I've been reading a lot of Black Hawk, and I had just I just love I love that comic. Like, and I know I'm in a particular era, but I've been reading a lot of the Golden Age stuff too and enjoying the hell out of it. And I decided to get that PSR book because
Oh, good, you did. I did too.
I did, and then they solicit the second volume in this month's too.
Oh, did they? I haven't gotten my previews yet. My LCS, they were damaged, and they have to return them. They even
Oh, damage previews?
yeah, they were required to return them. So I won't get until this week. And I don't know what's going on with DCBS. They said that they shipped the order, but when I looked, they only created the label. It doesn't sound like
Well,
you see.
the one thing that I know has happened with DCBS is every Christmas and every New Year's, they sort of fall
Shut down.
victim to, yeah, they fall victim to the holiday plus the weird shipping that I guess they get. So they've always historically have gotten behind. But on top of that, you've probably seen this. I'm getting like a ton of Marvel now just because of damages. Like, I am getting like everything that I was missing. I mean, with the exception of Winter Guard, it's the only one that I didn't get.
Same.
Everything else came in, like bang, like everything.
Last week, I got Iron Man 14 and 15 and Black Panther 1 and 2.
Same here. So they're also going through that, you know, like where they're having to have all these growing pains with Random House. So usually my stack is incredibly independent. Like if I had to show all the stacks, well, independent is like, I don't know, it's like 3/4 of a short box every week. And then the Marvel is, I don't know, about 20 to 30. But lately it's been almost as big as the other stack because of all the missing weeks.
Yeah. Yep.
And DC is the smallest stack, but it's not because I'm not getting everything. It's just they don't have as much stuff anymore.
Exactly. Yeah, they don't have as much stuff. And also they seem to, DCBS, whatever you call them, Lunar, seems to, you know, they've gotten their kinks out, and they're pretty much shipping when they're supposed to be shipping. So,
yeah. But let's get into our books, and I think we should let Chris start because he's been absent for a while.
Yeah, I can do that.
Sounds good.
Well, I mentioned a Rainbow Batman earlier, and that was a clue. I didn't read about the Rainbow Batman, but I saw him when I was flipping through the pages of Batman in the 50s.
Mm.
That trade paperback. Have you guys ever read the first appearance of Ace the Bat Hound?
Yes.
I don't remember.
Well, that's the first thing I read. It was from Batman issue 92. From June of 1955. It was written by Bill Finger, pencils by Sheldon Moldoff, and with inks by Stan Kay. And so Batman and Robin encounter a dog that's trying to swim in a river, and he's struggling to stay afloat. So they park the Batmobile and get out to help him. They figure out that he's having trouble swimming because he was stunned as if he was hit on the head. So they take him back to the Batcave. The next day, Bruce shows Dick a newspaper ad that he's put out under Bruce Wayne, that, you know, that they found this dog and they're looking for the owner. So the first time they go out in the Batmobile, the dog is run alongside as if it wants to come along. So Robin scoops him up and puts him in the car with them. Batman remarks that the problem with bringing him along is that, you know, he's put this ad out in the paper as Bruce Wayne, and the dog has a really distinct marking on its forehead. A little while later, while they're out on patrol, Robin takes some black cloth and makes a mask for him that covers up the mark on his head, and he also makes a little bat symbol for his collar. There's an escaped convict that was spotted going into a particular warehouse, so they go after him, and they bring the Robin brings the dog along rather than leave him alone in the Batmobile, and they go into this storage area, and it's all the equipment that they're keeping for this upcoming charity circus. That's an annual event, apparently, is in this storage area, including these huge clowns that they look to be, well, they're real tall. They're compared to Batman, so they're probably, if he's like 6 foot, they're probably like 24 to 30 feet tall. And we see that in the foreground of one of the panels that there's a wise guy sort of looking fella that's laying low and waiting for them to get underneath one of these clown statues. And as soon as they do, he pushes it over. Batman jumps and pushes Robin out of the way before he's caught underneath it. Well, the crook wanted to use this as a distraction to get away, but the dog proves to be a good partner, because he gets a hold of the crook's suit sleeve and holds him in place. It's the crook that actually calls the dog a bat hound, which the cops, when they show up, they agree that that bat hound's a good name for him for the way that he helped out. So back when they're back at Wayne Manor, Bruce gets a call from someone that tells him that the dog looks like the dog of a man named John Wilker, a dog named Ace, who lives in a cottage out in the suburbs. So as Bruce Wayne and Dick Gordon, Dick Grayson rather, they go out to this guy's house. When they get there, they find that his place looks like it's been ransacked. So they look around a little bit, and Bruce finds some documentation that tells him that Wilker was employed by the Gotham Printing and Engraving Company. So they head over there, and they find out that he hasn't been to work for a couple days. And he's well missed as their most skilled engraver. So they, of course, keep Ace with them till they are able to locate his owner. And they head out because the bat signal starts flashing. Robin looks around for Ace, and he's already, picked up the routine. As soon as he saw them start to head for the Batmobile, he started racing towards headquarters. They head over to Commissioner Gordon's office along with Ace, and they find out that there's been a burglary at a paper company, but that's not actually why Gordon called them. He actually wants them to help with a 4-year-old boy. His mother called, and he wandered away somewhere. The Linwood section. He specifies, and they can't locate him. So they head out to look for him, and sure enough, Ace comes in handy because there he's able to use his, smelling scent ability to, follow the boy's scent from a piece of his clothing. So he pretty much does the work on this job. He leads Robin to a drain pipe that's too big for Robin, but small enough for a little boy and or a dog. So Ace heads in and pulls the boy out and saves him. Turns out, meanwhile, while this is going on, Batman has followed up on the whole paper factory robbery. And so Robin and Ace go to catch up with them. And when they do, Ace starts growling. And they figure out that he's caught the scent of the burglars who broke into his owner's place. So they, Batman has a theory that they've broken into the paper company and they've gone after this engraver. So he thinks that they're going to strike next at this place called the Eastern Printing Company. And he explains to Robin on the way that the paper that they stole was the kind that valuable bonds are printed on. So he's figuring that they abducted Wilker to do the engraving, and they've got the paper, and now they just need the ink to make some counterfeit bonds. So as soon as they pull up at the ink store, Ace goes racing off, barking, because once again he's picked up the scent of the crooks that broke into his owner's house. Sure enough, the crooks recognize him. And when Batman and Robin come in, they've hit the dog, and they threaten to shoot the engraver. But the engraver says that if he does, if they do anything to harm Batman and Robin, he refuses to print their bonds. They say, you know, they're not going to touch him. He'll tie him up and put him in the back room. So Batman and Robin are tied up in this back room, and Robin tears Batman's bat symbol off of his chest with his teeth, and then drops it on the top of a lamp that they knock over so that it shines up the chimney, and it creates a bat signal.
So it's like when a see-through type.
Yeah, blocks out the bat shape on the light that's shining up through the chimney. So it's an impromptu bat signal that they create. You know, they're hoping the police see it or something like that, maybe, but it's Bathound, who, you know, recovers from being stunned, that responds to the bat signal. And he comes up, it's like a, I guess they're actually in a basement because he pushes on a casement window, and hops in through and bites the ropes to free them. So that, you know, that lets them out, and they're able to fight the crooks, and that pretty much wraps things up. You know, they have to kind of cover things. So there's a reporter that shows up, but he said, you know, he notices that when the owner takes the mask off of Ace, that it's, you know, the dog that was advertised in the paper by Bruce Wayne. And he says to Batman, does that mean? So Batman pulls out a snapshot that shows Batman and Bruce Wayne shaking hands with Ace in between them. And we know from Robin's thought bubble that it's actually Alfred wearing the Batman costume in the photo that they staged. So they were ready for this situation. And Alfred looks, I mean, it's, you can only kind of see it, but Alfred looks pretty ripped in his Batman costume. So He's in good shape. So they just, as far as the end of this story goes, you know, they leave Ace with his owner and tell him, you know, if he ever, the position for Bat Hound is will stay open if he's ever interested. So
the first appearance of Ace.
Yep. He's a good boy.
Yes. That's cool.
Yeah, I actually bought that a long time ago for Ace.
Nice. Yeah. Cool.
Looks like it's expensive these days, Mike.
Yeah, I got it. But my copy's like a VG. It's not a great copy.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's okay. If you want, I can go next.
Okay.
I'm going to talk about the movie I watched last night first. And that's The Mummy's Hand from 1940. And so this is the first sequel to the Universal picture of The Mummy. You know, basically,
did it come with that DVD set that you had?
Yeah, that big oh, Universal okay. set. Yeah.
Yeah.
So now I'm starting to get into movies I've never, you know, hadn't seen before. Because
I've never seen that one. Yeah, but I've seen The Mummy multiple times. I didn't know it was the sequel.
Yeah, so like just like you're saying, it's you know, there's a lot of there's just a lot of sequels to these, and of course I've seen all of the main ones, you know, the Wolfman, Dracula, Frankenstein, Bride of Dracula as well. I think that's huge enough that most people probably have seen that one as well. But some of these other ones like Dracula's Daughter, Son of Frankenstein, Invisible Man Returns, et cetera, I haven't seen like pretty much any of those. And so I was up to The Mummy's Hand last night. This one was it was odd in terms of the amount of, there was a lot of humor in it, and I mean, people are being killed by the mummy and stuff, and but it seems like nobody's all that, I don't know, it seems like a lot of stuff is played lightly, and it doesn't seem like there's a lot of danger. It was the tone was just odd. It was back and forth. It was like you can't tell if you should be nervous about something or if you shouldn't be nervous. But anyhow, basically what this what the plot of this one is that this old Egyptian priest is passing away, and he passes down his information to his replacement, who is also the professor at Egyptian museum. It's also worth noting that it's kind of hard to discern who's supposed to be Egyptian and who's not, because nobody's actually played by anyone from the Middle East. And most of them have English, British accents or American. So it's kind of difficult. The Egyptian professor, I think, is a straight up just English person. A lot of the people that were portraying like Egyptian workers or translators and stuff, at least by their names, looked like they cast a lot of Italian people, maybe because they happen to have dark hair and maybe a darker skin tone or whatever, but they certainly weren't Egyptian or Middle Eastern at all. So he gets this secret that from the first one there was the I think he was a priest named Karas. And that was the Boris Karloff role in the first one. And he was in love with this princess Ananka. And when he came back to life in the first one, he was searching for Princess Ananka, you know, in what was present day in the 1930s. and found a woman that may or may not have actually been the reincarnation of Princess Ananka. So in this one, you find these this new Egyptian professor who's now in charge of this sect. He's charged with protecting Princess Ananka's tomb from any type of foreigners or any type of archaeologists or grave robbers. To that end, they employ Karas, and they give him a certain a few drops of what's called Tana leaf mixture, and it actually brings him. It keeps. Apparently, he's immortal, Karas, and he stays alive. But when you give him some of these drops, it actually allows him to reanimate and go and protect the tomb. So we have a couple. This one down on his luck, American archaeologist who's basically has no money left. His last dig wasn't fruitful, and he's unwilling to go back to America. His name's Steve Bannon, and his buddy, his sidekick who does a lot of the humor in the movie, is named Babe Jensen. And as they're looking through a bazaar, Steve finds an old piece of pottery where he's able to kind of piece together that it looks like it actually might be the tomb, tells you where the tomb of Ananka is, which nobody can find. And so he takes it to the museum and talks to one of his friends there, and they both agree that this is looks to be authentic and is very promising. They take it to the main professor there, who is that person that's in charge of the sect. He plays it off that this is just a well-done copy, a fake rather, forgery, and there's really no good that can come and no useful information. And he does that, of course, because he wants to throw them off the trail. He doesn't want anyone disturbing the tomb. They don't buy it, the other three, and they decide, the third guy is named Dr. Petrie, and they decide, yeah, okay, we're gonna go in on this, but we need to raise some money in order to get this funded, and nobody will fund him because of his failures previously. They end up hanging out at a bar where they find a magician who is... he's the great Sulvani. His real name is Tim Sullivan from Brooklyn, New York, and he's done well for himself, and he's willing to put up $2,000 for a third of the profits, and he has a young daughter named Marta, and of course, you know, she becomes the love interest to Steve, and they all head out, and they're going to go ahead and start doing this dig. Now, unbeknownst to them, at this bar, there's a Egyptian beggar who came in, and he actually works for this professor. So he runs back to the professor, tells them what's going on, and they end up following them to the campsite. So what the campsite is, or where the area that they're in, actually is near Karas's tomb, not Princess Ananka, who it turns out is on the other side of the mountain. But typical to these types of movies, you know, the bad guys find out where these guys are, and sure enough, the professor reanimates the mummy. The mummy comes and kills Dr. Petrie. They're upset to see that, but that same night, they're still around the campfire hanging out, trying to figure out what their next move is, almost as if it's of no concern that like one of their party has been murdered, because they saw like you know, a hand mark around his neck, he was strangled. It's worth noting that the mummy is only given as much of this Tana juice as needed to actually move around, and it only allows one of his hands to actually be useful. So the next, that same, I think it was the same evening, it might have been the next evening, but anyhow, their Egyptian translator is guarding while the rest of them are investigating the tomb. And sure enough, the mummy comes. And what they're doing is they're kind of baiting the mummy by putting small vials of this Tana potion in people's various people's tents, and that draws the mummy to that particular tent, and then he ends up killing whoever's nearby and grabs that vial for himself. So he ends up killing this Egyptian translator again. Now at this point, there's two people dying, so Steve decides that Marta and her father have to go. The first thing in the morning, they're going to take him back, and then Steve will come back with enough resources to continue to investigate. They decide to turn in, and suddenly there's a scream, and sure enough, the mummy's back, and this time in Marta and her father's tent, and he's strangling the dad. They come in just in time, kind of. I shouldn't even say just in time, because the scream actually distracted the mummy to grab her and take her away. So what they end up coming to is just a ripped back of the tent. Marta's father's, he's still alive. He's just slightly injured, and there's no sign of the mummy or Marta. Finally, they decide to, Steve and Babe decide to split up. Steve's going to go through Karis's tomb and look around for clues. He tells Babe to go around to the other side, because they've gotten, they found an amulet that has a complete map, and it seems like there is a passage from the other side. So Babe goes around to the other side. Steve ends up finding a secret passage behind sarcophagus that leads him through into Ananka's tomb. And there we have the mummy, the high priest, who is now going to give Tana juice to Marta to make her immortal, and then also take it himself to make him immortal and be his high priestess and wife. So Steve gets there just in time. The mummy starts charging after him. He shoots the mummy a couple times. Him and the high priest get embroiled in a fist fight. He ends up shooting the priest, and the priest falls down dead. The mummy starts coming back after Steve. And in the meantime, the high priest had started making quite a lot of this Tana potion. And so that draws the mummy towards it. And Marta's screaming that, you know, you can't let the mummy get that, because then he'll be unstoppable if he gets that much. So they start wrestling, fighting. And just when it looks like Steve's going to be choked to death, Babe comes in from the other side, shoots the mummy's hand, makes him let go. Steve kind of knocks the mummy down, grabs a brazier, and throws it on the mummy, and the mummy burns up, and everyone lives happily ever after. It was okay. I enjoyed it, but it definitely didn't seem to know what type of tone it wanted to go for. If it was going to be one of the, you know, classic Universal horror movies, or if it was going to be more on the comedic side, because there definitely was a whole lot of comedy and not a whole lot of anyone being all that upset, apart from like Marta screaming a couple times. But everyone else pretty much took everything pretty lightly.
More like the tone of Abbott Costello Meet the Mummy.
Right. It wasn't. Yeah. It wasn't to that extent, but I definitely could see it, you know, starting to move in that direction. So I'll be interested to see when I get to some of the other ones. Like, I think The Invisible Woman is next. And I've got some other Frankenstein ones and so on coming, to see if it stays that way, or if this is just, I mean, that guy who played that Babe Jensen, he seems like a comedic type actor. So it could have been just, you know, with his casting,
yeah,
and all that, I don't know. But
I'd be,
you know,
curious
it was
if
for sure.
A lot of the Universal movies that you're getting in now kind of failed at the box office or something, because we don't hear a lot about them, you know?
Really, not
No,
much at
it's
all,
like
right?
all
I
of
mean,
the what they launched with or what you hear about, you know? Like the
yeah, and
deeper,
of course,
the
Bride of
deepest one you get
Frankenstein is
is
huge.
Bride, yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Bride of Frankenstein for sure is huge, but it was the same director, the same cast. It was right at the start of the whole thing,
Yeah. I think the Abbott and
so.
Costello ones did well too, because
Oh, I'm sure.
for one, they did a lot of them, and they've shown them a lot. Like they show up a lot, so I think it has to do with some kind of popularity.
Yeah, and I've got those are actually there's a couple, at least a couple of them are actually in that package as well.
Yeah.
Meet Frankenstein and Meet the Invisible Man are in there,
Yeah.
so hopefully those will be actually. Oh, Meet the Mummy is in there too, so
Yeah,
it'll be interesting to watch.
I don't think I've seen the Meet the Invisible Man, but I have seen the Meets Frankenstein definitely, and which has Dracula in it, and then the Meets the Mummy.
Yeah, so I mean, we'll see how it goes. The next ones coming up are the Invisible Woman, and then the Wolfman finally appears because he was a later movie, 1941. So of course I've seen that one, and then there's the Ghost of Frankenstein and the Invisible Agent. So we'll see how these. Apparently the Invisible movies were doing well because the Invisible Agent would be the fourth one
Yeah.
out of the series. Yeah.
Did you see the new Invisible Man?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
That was really good. I mean, that was really well done, set in like
Current time.
issues and yeah,
Yeah.
exactly. Like, with stalking and stuff like that and
Yeah, it
emotional,
just was well done.
and yeah. That was really, I mean,
Because
that was very heavy and
they've
heavy.
tried to redo like the Universal franchise with the Mummy, with Tom Cruise and
Yeah, well, even
Invisible
before that with
Man.
Brandon Fraser
Yeah.
with The
Well,
Mummy, that was
the
solid. That
mummies
was
were
awesome.
successful. Well, the
Yeah.
mummies with Brandon Fraser were successful. They even spawned
Yeah.
off like the Scorpion King movie and all kinds of other things.
Exactly. Yeah, those were good. But yeah, this was fun. I gave it a 6 out of 10, so a 3 out of 5. I enjoyed it.
Well, I'm gonna cover Green Lantern number 134 from 1980. And this has on the cover an Adam Strange backup. That's where they had the stars across the cover. More new pages of story and art featuring Adam Strange. And I really have become an Adam Strange fan. Like I've always been an Adam Strange fan, but the more and more I read Adam Strange, the more and more I love it. And I've loved Tom King's Strange Adventures. I don't know the outcome of that, like what how it's gonna affect the character, or if it's in canon, or if it was just
Did you read the whole thing or no?
yeah. Did you?
Yes.
Did you like it?
Yeah.
I thought it was incredible, 'cause I was like on the edge of my seat, like it was very like it kept leading you in different directions, like is he a hero? Is he not a hero? Did he betray
Yeah.
his wife? Did he betray his daughter? Did he like it was pretty interesting how it all turned out,
It really was.
yeah, I between that and Rorschach, I thought they were pretty incredible. A matter of fact, I double dipped on those hardcovers for those two, because I really
As did I.
I want to digest Strange Adventures in the hardcover form because there's so much depth. And I had just recently read the Kubert Prestige Adam Strange, which still to this day is probably my favorite Adam Strange ever, because that's when they were doing like the Dark Knight Adam Strange. They did Hawkworld. They were launching all these like square bound prestige format books.
Oh yeah.
Black Hawk 1 through 3, they were doing all kinds of different revamping, making darker versions of the characters. But that was incredible. But this has an Adam Strange backup. It has Dr. Polaris on the cover, and he's got like a green aura around him. And he's saying, "Your power ring was your strength, Green Lantern, but now it's mine. There's no way you can survive on your own." And he's like, "Yes, there is." The thing that's really interesting about this is Dr. Polaris. I don't recall Green Lantern ever using his ring for mind control. Like, do any of you
No.
ever think he's used it? Well, maybe he's just never
I
used it
don't know.
because he's
Not
not a
that I don't
villain.
think
But you
so.
think if anybody would do that, it would be Sinestro when he was a Green Lantern, using it for mind control of his people because he wanted to be a dictator,
Yeah.
an authoritarian. But this doesn't. This is continued because it opens up with Polaris controlling people. Like he has the ring, like the ring is working, and he's controlling like lots of people. And I'm like, wow, he's tapped an ability, that I've never seen Green Lantern tap, and he's acting like a better, like he knows the ring better than Green Lantern. So I found that fascinating. And he left Green Lantern to die in the North Pole, and all he's left with is the shirt on his back and his costume. And he's this whole issue, he's sort of just trying to say, I don't know where he's in a blizzard, he's on like an ice cap, and he's like, I'm gonna die, I'm gonna freeze to death. Supposedly the costume that the Guardians gave him has some thermal properties to it to keep him sort of warm. But the interesting thing about that is I always thought the costume was generated by the ring. And in this case, only the mask is generated by the ring, which is different than I ever, 'cause usually when he changes, he puts the ring on and then his whole, like, if he's wearing a jacket and trousers, it turns to his costume. But in this case, he doesn't even have the ring and he's left in his costume. And he decides to go fishing. He's like, well, if I'm going to survive and try to make my way off of this thing, I need to eat. So he goes fishing. He catches a fish, which was pretty good, pretty quickly. But a polar bear pops out of the water and takes the fish and almost kills him, and sort of drags him. They're fighting on the ice patch, and then Hal just says, I'm in trouble. I'm just gonna have to charge the bear. He decides to charge the bear, knocks him into the water, and then he's like soaking wet on the North Pole, and he looks like he's gonna freeze to death. Falls over. So this is about him, and he's like, I don't know what I'm gonna do. Oh, there's a cave. I'm gonna go hang out in the cave and dream about Carol. So maybe that'll keep him warm. And Carol's in New York at this time, and she's going to defend Ferris Airlines, 'cause they're under suit by the government, and they could lose all their government contracts. So she's there. Hal was supposed to be there to help her out, but he's not. And some mysterious figure kidnaps her, and she never shows up for the court date. So guess what? Ferris loses all the government contracts, which causes Tom to lose his job. They used to use this awful face, this awful term for Tom called pie face. But and he actually became a New Guardian at one point, because after the Millennium, Tom became one of the characters that was granted powers at a point.
Oh, I
And
remember that. That's
yeah,
right. I
he ha he
forgot.
has this. So he was working at Ferris, and he gets a phone call, and it said, "Oh, we just closed down Ferris because we lost all the contracts." And he's like, "Holy crap, I'm broke. How am I gonna feed my family?" And the thing I didn't know is that Tom had left Ferris Aircraft because he wanted to form his own company, and he made a gas, like he made gas stations, like a gas station chain that was owned by him. But I guess at this time we were going through a fuel crisis, so the writer was Marv Wolfman, and he's like, "Well, I'll add this fuel crisis stuff." The art was by Joe Staton, and he lost his all of his businesses. So he lost his fuel because he couldn't get the fuel because of the fuel crisis. So he had to close down all his gas stations, and he had to go back to Ferris. So he's having some bad luck. He went back to Ferris, and now Ferris has gone under. So he's like, "How the hell am I going to support my family?" Meanwhile, Hal is freezing to death still, and he's walking in the storm. And this is the first time I've seen him take off like his shirt. And underneath his shirt is the black part of his costume. So it's like he has that kind of like Guy Gardner has the jacket that goes over the other part of his costume. This he's using it as a face guard because the winds are blowing very high, and a wolf decides, "Oh man, that looks like a great meal to have." And the wolf almost kills him, but he's able to break, they fall over a cliff, and he's able to break the wolf's neck. So he's there. He's still thinking about Carol, like, how am I going to get where I'm going to go? And he finally gets the strength. It relives his origin with Abin Sur because he's starting to hallucinate. And he finally finds a refuge in a National Geographic Regional Center. He gets there and he like passes out. So Tom, back to Earth. Well, they're both on Earth. He's at the North Pole, but Tom is near Ferris aircraft. And he's contemplating, how am I going to feed my family? My family's broke. I don't even know how to get food on the table. He starts contemplating suicide, which I thought was pretty interesting for a comic book at this time. He's like going to jump off a cliff. He says, "All my insurance makes me worth more dead than alive." And he's going to jump off. Well, Hal Gate came back. Of course, he's snowblind, so he has these glasses on. And he's saying, "Mister, you could stuff all your problems through the eye of a needle and have room left over for God to slip through. Don't talk to me about problems. I went through hell to get here to find you because I need you." And he goes, "Carol's been kidnapped by God knows who. My ring's been stolen by someone who now has the power to destroy this world. I'm probably the only one who can stop that maniac, and I'm half blind." So he says he needs, and then he calls him a coward because he's like, "You're a quitter. You're gonna quit your life. Well, go ahead and quit and just jump off the cliff. I don't care." Well, Tom says, "Well, you know he's got a point. I can't be a quitter. I'm gonna join you." And that's how that issue ends. Very, like I immediately, this is one of those things where I ordered this from my comic shop and it was one of the issues I was missing, but it's not easy for me to find the other two issues because they're in long boxes stacked on top of each other. They're not in the drawer boxes. So I can't pull out those. I know where they're at, but I can't pull them out easily. So I immediately went to the app to see if it had, I wanted to read the issue before when Dr. Polaris came into power and the issue after to see how this panned out. But, it wasn't there, unfortunately. So the Adam Strange backup, he's on Ran, and the main villain is called Avakar. This is written by Laurie S. Sutton, so I wonder if that's Tom Sutton's wife or significant other. I don't know. And then the pencilers, Rodin Rodriguez, so both people that I'm not too familiar with. And Adam Strange is pretty much caught in this guy's molecular disruptor, and he's torturing Adam Strange almost the entire issue. But Adam Strange thinks he can overcome the machine if he just succumbs to all the pain, and he is able to disrupt the machine. And what that guy's after is he's trying to steal Zeta Beam technology, and Adam Strange doesn't allow him to do that. He finds the rocket pack, and takes out and escapes from that building, and that which is like in a volcano. So they're inside like a volcano on Ran, and he blows up the volcano. Adam Strange barely escapes. He thinks he killed Adam Strange, the villain. But then the Zeta Beam picked him up just in time and dropped him on Earth, and he like falls out of the sky. I don't know how he can live. He lands on his head, and he's just there, and it says to be continued next issue. But yeah, it was a really good issue, 'cause I definitely wanted to see how the heck he's gonna get a ring back from Dr. Polaris, and I wanted to see how he got defeated by Dr. Polaris to begin with. Because Polaris seems to know how to use the ring, and I didn't think the ring would just work for everybody. Apparently, it does.
I didn't think so. I think they might have kind of changed that over time, afterwards, because I didn't think so either. I didn't think that anyone could just pick it up and use it. That's interesting.
But that was one of my books.
Sounds like a good one.
All right, well, I read some more 50s Batman. This story called The First Batman was from Detective Comics 235 from September 1956, so a little over a year after Batman 92. Same creative team, Bill Finger, Sheldon Moldoff, Stan Kay. And I've, a lot of, it's so often nowadays that they pull ideas and concepts from older comics, and especially with DC pre-crisis stuff that they can reconfigure.
Grant Morrison
And
loved to do that,
yeah,
to
he
pull,
especially
especially
brought,
out of the 50s.
yeah, a lot of stuff into the into Batman's in particular. And it starts out with a starts out where Bruce and well, Batman and Robin are in costume on the splash page. But when we get into the story proper, it's Bruce and Dick up in the attic of Wayne Manor. And Thomas Wayne's old desk is up there. And Dick accidentally presses a hidden spring, and it opens up a secret drawer. And so Bruce pulls out part of what looks like a bat costume, which Dick is surprised to see. And Bruce says he actually thinks he's seen the costume before on his father, long, long time ago. And so Dick points out that that technically means your father was a Batman before you. And Bruce says, well, that's impossible. He's the first Batman, and he adopted that costume years after his parents were killed. And so then we get like about a page, a little less than a page, recap of Batman's origin. And in this particular incarnation of it, it is a mobster named Joey Chill that killed them. And then Joe Chill was then killed by other mobsters who had a grudge against him. So they also find in the drawer a can of movie film and a diary. And so they hook up a projector, and it's a little film of a masquerade ball. And the theme of the ball was flying creatures. And first prize is awarded to Dr. Thomas Wayne for his Batman costume. And so it looks kind of like Batman's, if you haven't seen it before. There's no emblem on the chest, but it is kind of like a gray suit with blue trunks. The cowl actually has like bat ears on it, and the cape is made to look more literally like bat wings. Well, the right on film, the some mobsters come in to break into the party, and having heard that Thomas Wayne is a doctor, they want to abduct him, or you know, take him by gunpoint out of the party. And Thomas says, "You can't threaten me," and punches one of the guys in the face. And Bruce says, "Attaboy, Dad." He's happy to see that it runs in the family. But ultimately, they have guns, and Thomas has no choice but to go along with them. And then the movie abruptly ends there. So they look at the diary also, and Bruce reads Thomas's writing, talking about how their boy, their little boy, of course, that being Bruce, was seemed really fascinated with his father's bat costume. So Bruce, having read this, he's kind of wonders if it, when he, you know, when the his origin, when the bat flew into his room, if he wasn't just inspired by seeing the bat, but it kind of prodded a subconscious memory of his father's costume. So he reads more of the diary and finds out that after his father was taken from the party, he was brought to a hideout where, you know, you've probably seen this kind of setup in some other stories where the crooks, there's an injured you know, there's an injured crook and he needs the attentions of a doctor. So a doctor is abducted to operate. Sure enough, there's a guy named Lou Moxon, who's a bank robber that's being pursued by the police. And he's gotten shot and he wants Dr. Wayne to remove the bullet. Thomas writes about how he knew that once he removed the bullet, he didn't suspect that Moxon would, you know, allow him to live, because, you know, then he could obviously tell the police where he's hiding. So when he goes back into the room, he hooks a foot around his chair to knock Moxon over, and then deals with the other two police by knocking them out. So Bruce and Dick are both pretty impressed with Thomas Wayne, and even without his training, he was, you know, kind of acted like a Batman himself. So Dyer continues to talk about how Moxon was sentenced to 10 years in prison, and that he threatens Thomas Wayne for his involvement and him being caught. And 10 years later, having pretty much forgotten about Moxon, he's actually confronted on the street by Moxon. And Moxon reminds him that he swore he'd get him back, but he's too smart to do it himself. So he'll get somebody else to do it for him. And that's the end of the diary. So, you know, Bruce concludes that this is kind of part of his origin as Batman, that, you know, it wasn't just a random event that killed his parents, but it was actually that Moxon actually hired Joey Chill as a hired killer to take out Thomas Wayne. And he figures that he was left alive, that Bruce was left alive as a witness to testify that his parents were killed by a robber, you know, that Joey Chill intentionally made it look like a stick up to further try to disconnect it from anybody else. So they obviously want to find out more about Moxon. So they go to Commissioner Gordon, and Moxon puts out feelers around the country and eventually finds out that Moxon's now in the billboard blimp business out west in Coastal City. So they take the bat plane out arrive at a place called Moxon Sky High Advertising Company. They sneak into a dark hangar, but Robin accidentally kicks a gasoline can over, and they are immediately caught in a flashlight beam. Some of Moxon's hoods. So we get a few panels of them fighting it out. But they finally abduct Moxon and take him to police station. And Batman declares that he's charging him with the murder of Dr. Thomas Wayne. Well, Moxon says that he's never even heard of Dr. Wayne. And not only that, he's willing to take a lie detector test to prove it. So they do just that, and he claims to not have ever heard of Joey Chill or Dr. Wayne, he passes the test. So they aren't sure what's going on here, so Batman makes a long-distance call to Commissioner Gordon, and they find out that Moxon was in an automobile accident right after Bruce's parents were killed. He just wandered away from the hospital, and no one ever saw him after that. So basically, he has Moxon has amnesia, and so that's why he passed the test, because he's not lying. He truly doesn't remember any of what he did. They're not going to let things be settled there, though. They figure, even though Moxon has lost his memory, he's still probably involved in something illegal, particularly given the reaction that they got when they went to his business. So they trail after one of his blimps, and eventually they see it stop over top of a building, and a man come down the ladder from the blimp, and they figure out that he's using his blimp to pull burglaries. Robin jumps down and goes after the guy on the rooftop, and Batman swings from a ladder descended from the bat plane into the gondola beneath the blimp, and takes out guys in there. Batman's costume at this point, you know, they're far away from Gotham City, and it's looking pretty rough. He's got a lot of patches torn out of it and stuff. And it's real shredded, and Robin comments on that. He doesn't have a spare, but they do have his father's old costume. So, of course, Bruce Wayne dresses up in the old Batman costume of his father's, and it's in that costume that they confront Moxon. And seeing that old costume jogs Moxon's memory. That wasn't even Bruce's intention, but it frightens Moxon into thinking that Thomas Wayne has come for revenge. And he runs out of the building. Batman screams, "Moxon, look out, that truck!" And off panel, of course, you know, it's the 50s, but there's a screech of brakes and a cry, and Moxon's career of violence ends in violence, as the caption reads. Batman wanted to take him alive to stand trial for his crimes, but that's the end of Moxon. And they hang up the old Batman costume in the Batcave with a sign that says, "From the Wayne murder case finally solved by this costume once worn by the first Batman." So yeah, I thought that was very interesting. You know, I thought it was interesting how even at that point they were kind of adding to and expanding Batman's origin, and also, you know, the whole concept, which is especially with Flashpoint, and I think it's going to be part of the Flash movie and stuff, the whole idea of a Thomas Wayne, at least, if not, you know, if it's a different universe, you know, yeah. But having been a Batman, so.
Very interesting.
I like to see where these ideas come from and where they, you know, it's like everything comes from somewhere nowadays, and how they adapt and change these ideas for modern audience.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty cool.
Cool deal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I guess it's my turn?
Yes.
Okay. I have Adventure Comics number 480. They present Dial H for Hero. Appears to be the second issue of Adventure Comics that featured Dial H for Hero. I know that they appeared, I don't remember where. What else was Dial H for Hero in?
House of Secrets or House of Mystery, I can't remember.
That's where they first appeared, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this one has three stories in a single 24-page comic. So just 3 8-page stories. Honestly, each one is very similar to the last.
Did you ever read Hero? H-E-R-O-R-O?
When was it from? Doesn't sound
like 90s. Early 2000s or late 90s, yeah. Or something.
Yeah.
No. Was
that's,
it?
That's the best.
Was it DC one?
For Hire. Yeah.
Oh, okay. No.
Yeah,
no.
It was a play. It was a play on Hero for Hire, or not Hero for Hire, but Dial H for Hero.
No, and I'm looking at it now. I never read this one. 22 issues, it looks like. This one was, like I said, the conceit here, obviously, if you know anything about Dial H for Hero, is that every time whoever's holding the dial dials H-E-R-O, they become a different superhero, and with no prediction as to what it's going to be. But at this time, with the Adventure Comics, they took it a little further where they actually took suggestions from fans, from readers. So the readers actually created these characters, sent them in as submissions, and if they were used, they ended up getting a Dial H t-shirt. So
would love to see what those t-shirts look like.
It says, "I dialed H for hero," and in a big dial, and in the middle of the dial, it shows the DC logo.
Wow, okay, cool.
Yeah. So, and the very last page, it has all sorts of basically a release form, you know, very very legalese that you have to sign and that you have to write your name, your age, and if you're under 18, a parent or a guardian has to sign it as well. Because, of course, you know, as soon as you send it, it now belongs to DC. You don't get any compensation for, you know, any future use, et cetera, et cetera. So somebody like hit the jackpot with like the most popular character. You know, they don't want them coming back to them. But yeah, so anyhow, both. So in these stories, you can they're asking you to send submissions for character ideas, but also if you would like to design any fashions for the characters, you can also submit fashion ideas as well. So they were really going all out with fan interaction. Of course, the only way
imagine
to do it
the yeah. Imagine if you came across Dial 8. Let's pretend Superman wasn't created, right? And you created Superman. You'd probably get a t-shirt out of it, and that's it.
You got a t-shirt, yeah.
I don't know if you're listening to the kayfabe, cartoonist kayfabe guys.
No.
But they're reading the dispositions of the court cases that I bought, of the McFarlane court cases.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah, they're reading it. So, like, one guy will play the lawyers and the other guy will play like Neil Gaiman. So it like reads like, oh, the lawyer's questioning Gaiman. And it's really fascinating that Angela stuff, like mm-hmm. how that was contracted, because it was like this, that's why I'm bringing it up.
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman asked, McFarlane for a contract, and McFarlane was like, I don't want to deal with that contract stuff. That always gets messy. I'll treat you better than DC ever treated you. But he should have done the contract because, you know, he did eventually end up losing, you know, Angela, but because now Marvel owns it because Gaiman sold it to
Angela,
sold
it
to him.
Yeah.
But that's the stickiness of this. Imagine if they created some iconic character that was in the movies.
You never know,
yeah.
Either. You know, at the time, of course, you don't know. And if you are a kid,
yeah, you're just like, oh my god, my character's going to be created on panel.
I could see DC or Warner Brothers as a company having a lot of publicity issues if that had ever happened. If it turned out it was like an 8-year-old kid or 11-year-old kid, and they're taking it back. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's so easy to say.
Yeah, the media definitely would.
What any of that means.
You know,
their parents signed off on it, but the parents, you know, they don't know anything about comic books or what. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, the media would side with the kid in a heartbeat.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. That's funny.
Sorry
but
to
yeah,
disrupt
so this,
you, but
you know,
it just reminded me of, you know, that kind of thing I was watching.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, like I said, I mean, I actually read the whole form at the end. It's, you know, it's very clear, you know, in there that this is going to be DC's property. So,
yeah.
You know, but yeah, anyhow, the first issue, what happens is thousands of years ago, a spaceship crashed on Earth in Egypt and was destroyed, and it's shaped identically to the Sphinx. And the occupant, this powerful alien, actually got knocked unconscious. He just laid in the sand for years and years, like in a kind of like a comatose state, buried by, you know, one sandstorm after the other, until suddenly, you know, people evolved and they start making their way across Egypt and so on. And when he did wake up, he found himself not with not enough energy or power to be able to get out from underneath all of that sand. But he used his mental power to try to try to get people to unbury him, but he was still too weak. And so what, instead of saving the alien, what they did was they suddenly got these flashes in their minds that they thought were their own ideas of like building the pyramids and building the Sphinx and so forth. And so they built all that, all those monuments, and not helping this guy at all. So he just laid under there for thousands of years. And then in present day, an oil company comes to do some exploratory digging, and they start shaking the earth around enough that it actually loosens the sand, and he finally is able to free himself. And so he breaks out of the sand. He rises up. This is the Sphinx created by David Weil, age 18, from Nova Scotia, Canada. And he needs energy. He needs energy to exist. And so he almost, without touching them or anything, just being near these people, he starts kind of sucking energy out of them, draining them away until they pass out. And he flies off saying that he needs more. So then we cut to the Alexander Hamilton Junior High, and we have what the heck is their names at this point? Christopher King and Victoria Grant. They each possess a hero dial. They have their own, and they're in class and they're just hanging out and stuff. And it's at this point where you're seeing these teenagers that they make a note that you can design the fashions for Chris and Vicky. Read our special form in this issue. Chris is the class lets out and he's walking down the hallway when suddenly there's a crash and the window explodes, and he looks out and there's the Sphinx. So he goes ahead and he dials H for hero and starts flying up into the air, and he finds himself becoming Mr. Mystical, the master of magic. And that's created by Jeff Anderson, age 13, from Alpena, Michigan. And they make it a point in each story to make sure that the readers understand that when they transform to these heroes, they instinctively know how to use the powers. So it's not like they're flailing about each time. And so he starts wrapping up the Sphinx, but the Sphinx absorbs his power too. And he's like, oh, that this person had a lot of power. He's like, I've got to, this might be enough to get me home. And Vicky, they each have I think Chris has a watch and Vicky has a locket that glows, and it means the other person has used their super dial. So she starts noticing her locket is glowing, and she excuses herself from the classroom and dials the hero dial and becomes the molecular maiden. She flies up, and sure enough, the Sphinx drains her energy as well. But then he realizes that even after draining all of this energy, he still doesn't have enough to get back to his home planet. And he's just very distraught. And Chris and Vicky both kind of come to, and they say, well, maybe we can help you. And he's like, what, after I captured you? And they said, well, you're not actually trying to hurt anyone. You're just trying to get home. So as Mr. Mystical, Chris recreates his spaceship. And as the molecular maiden, Vicky is able to understand exactly what type of fuel that's needed for this spacecraft. And she injects it full of fuel. And the Sphinx gives him a heartfelt thanks and flies off into the stars to go home. And so that's the end of that story. The next one is, again, a similar type of situation in that this villain named Thunder Axe, takes hostage everyone on a cruise boat that is there for charity to raise money for the new hospital in town. And he's stealing everything that they have, but also kidnapping each one of them. And they're going to be set free once each person gives $1 million ransom for each person on the boat. So Chris's dad actually works for he's a police officer or a detective, and so he gets this information at the police station that this place has been this ship has been captured, and the ransom is $1 million a person. So he's like, we're gonna have to figure out how to raise the money. There's really no other way to do it. Now, to make matters worse, it's Vicky's parents who actually own the boat and are on there. Apparently she's quite rich. Now, once the kids find out and overhear from Chris's dad, because of course they have to tell Vicky that there's a problem with her parents and that she needs to sign off on $1 million for each of them. They transform again, and she becomes Hypno Girl, and she's quite upset because usually almost always they can fly. Now she needs to fly off to find out where this boat is, and she can't fly. But when Chris transforms, he becomes Starflare, and Starflare can fly like a human missile. So he picks her up and they start searching, and they end up finding a remote island with Thunder Axe's ship and the cruise ship there. So they go check the situation out. Thunder Axe is there with his minions. They start fighting, and Chris takes care of Thunder Axe. Hypno Girl Vicky takes care of all of the minions, and they rescue everyone. And then they transform back and back home, and Vicky's parents are happy to be back, and so they say they wish they knew who those superheroes were because they'd love to thank them. The last one probably was my favorite of the three. The kids are at a circus, and there's this actually pretty cool looking not a hero, I guess a villain, battering ram. He's got these big like ram horns, and he goes through like a 6 foot thick brick wall and crashes right through it. And everyone's very impressed. However, as they're getting ready to leave, we cut to the ringmaster, and he's calling Battering Ram, whose real name is Hogan, over because the strong man saw Battering Ram stealing from the gate receipts again. And apparently this is the second time they let him off with a warning. The first time they say, this time you're fired. So Battering Ram starts punching and beating up the ringmaster, and Chris and Vicky see this. Of course, they have to change. So Vicky turns into the Midnight Wisp, and she's got super speed. However, she's not quite fast enough. Battering Ram knocks her down, and Chris turns into Solar Flare, and he's got a power punch and can fly. Just as Battering Ram is coming at him, he gives as strong a punch as he can, and actually knocks Battering Ram back and seemingly knocks him out. They start talking to the ringmaster. The ringmaster explains what's going on. However, the Battering Ram is not finished. He gets up and he rams into all three of them, knocking them unconscious. And
what does he look like, Battering Ram?
So he has those, ram horns. He's orange. He's wearing a black bodysuit that doesn't cover his arms or legs, and he's got black boots, but his skin tone is orange. And they're saying that the ringmaster explained that he's a mutant. He was born this way.
I wonder if he was the inspiration for Ram Man.
He doesn't look bad. it's kind of interesting in terms of a villain, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I was probably my favorite of the bunch. So it's the next day, and the kids are at school, and they let out for school for the day. They're walking down the street, and of course there's battering ram. He's bashing up a police car, and he's saying that he's got a mission to do, and nobody's going to stop him. So Vicky realizes that the mission must be to get back at the circus and destroy the circus. So she goes ahead. She excuses herself from her friend, and she becomes Strato Girl, Mistress of the Wind. And so she flies up into the air, and Chris was walking with one of his buddies. They say goodbye to each other when they get to his house. He says, "My watch is glowing. Vicky's using her hero dial, so let me go ahead and turn mine on." And he becomes some sort of weird cosmic cowboy. So he calls himself the Wrangler. And he can use his cosmic lasso to create an energy horse. So he jumps on the horse and he rides, on thin air. So him and Strato Girl meet up and they get to the circus just in time. They break through the big top, and the ringmaster is chained up to another 6 foot thick brick wall, and battering ram is coming right at him. It's going to just, turn him into mush. And Strato Girl uses her super breath to back battering ram up. And what's his name? The Wrangler uses his lasso and ties up battering ram and knocks him to the ground. They free the ringmaster, and the ringmaster offers them both a job at the circus, saying that they'd be the greatest stars ever. And they said, "Sorry, we're here for one night only. And that was the end of that story. So all of the stories were written by Marv Wolfman, and all of the art, the pencils were by Carmine Infantino.
Oh, nice.
So, So like I said, they were all pretty much the same type of beats, but still definitely enjoyable to read. You get the setup with who the villain is, and you cut to the kids. The kids somehow find out that something's going on. They turn on their hero dials once or twice for each story to showcase, some of these new creations, and end up defeating the bad guy. But it was fun seeing the different designs, and that battering ram was my favorite. That was the best out of any of the creations.
Nice. You should try to hunt down these people.
I know. That was David Weil also. So he created the Sphinx and he created the battering ram.
Yeah, there
you go.
So
he was very prolific in this.
Mike, what was this? Was it Dial H for Hero where I found the guy on Twitter?
I think it was.
Oh, you did? I don't remember
ago,
this.
Yeah. I think it was in the early days of Retro where
he found someone.
It was like a person in this area.
Yeah.
Oh, you're kidding me. That's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you interact with him on Twitter?
Yeah, he said he never got his t-shirt.
What? Oh, my God. He needs to sue.
I forgot about
that.
Yeah,
might be past the statute of limitations or whatever. That's for crimes. But
you gotta take him to court. I never got my t-shirt.
Yeah.
Hey, that's
it
why
inspired He-Man's Ram Man. Many toys were made.
That's why they moved to the West Coast, so they didn't have to give away their t-shirts.
I forgot about that. That was a long time ago.
Wow, that's funny.
That's funny.
I like that.
Well, my final is Black Hawk number 266, which has a cover of the swastika coming to look like it's going to squash the Blackhawks. And it's titled A New Recruit. The cover's by Dan Spiegel. The main story is by Mark Evanier and Dan Spiegel. Continuing where Rob has heard a lot of this because he on DC Everything Else I covered one, and on the other one I covered on the last episode we recorded, I recovered another. But Hugo Merson.
Which number was this one?
This was 266.
Okay.
And on both of those issues, one of them was like. Chop Chop, we figured his real name and how racist that was, and he finally got his Blackhawk costume. And the other one was tracking down Hugo Mersin, which is the scientist that developed the werewolf for the Nazis. And he pretty much is a scientist that doesn't care who he develops these weapons of mass destruction for. He just wants to get paid the highest bid. This shows they captured him in the previous issue, and then it introduces Walter Schroener, and this professor Hugo used technology to make like a facial reconstruction of Black Hawk. So that name, he plays an important part of the story, because he's imitating Black Hawk in various areas and killing allies. And then it introduces Lieutenant Theodore Gaynor, and he is actually the new recruit that is taking Chop Chop's place, because Chop Chop went to go fight the war with the Japanese for China. He took a leave of absence after he got his Black Hawk uniform. And so this new recruit that is really talented, like he's the best shooter that they have. He's taking the planes up, and he's really good. But one of the things that he's one of those guys that will kill Nazis. Like sometimes our Black Hawks will capture Nazis, tie them up, and just leave them there, and not, kill them. This guy's will gun them down. And he gets chewed out otherwise. Meanwhile, that guy that's has the false face of Black Hawk goes to the prison and frees the professor. So now the professor is free again. And Black Hawk knows at this time, hey, somebody must be impersonating him because members of his team weren't you here last week? And he's like, no, I wasn't there. So they know something's up. And they know that somebody's using his face to do various activities. They trace down the professor to another location where Churchill is being attacked in the UK with by a giant worm. This is not like the war worm will, but it looks like it really does look like a worm, and it just like. It's like sliming its way out of the streets and like destroying buses and buildings because it's taking out various things. And they managed to destroy that worm at that location. They capture the guy that's has the false face of Black Hawk, and they actually shoot him dead. Stanislaus tries to capture him, but that new recruit called Gaynor, he actually shoots him dead. There's a cool ad for Sergeant Rock Toys and the Warlord Toys, Arak, Warlord, and Hercules. They missed opportunity on the Sergeant Rock Toys because they just labeled them like generic soldiers instead of saying, oh, this is Sergeant Rock, this is Ice Cream Soldier, this is Short Round. And they were sold at Kmart.
That was a huge miss. I don't
Yeah.
understand why they did that.
I don't either. There was a second story, and it's called Make 'Em Laugh, and this is about one of the Black Hawks, da, 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 Olaf. So Olaf, before he joined the Black Hawks, he was part of the circus. So he goes and visits his circus buddies, and they're saying, "Well, do you want to hang out with us for a while?" Well, he hangs out for dinner when there's a knock at their tent. Somebody's at the front of their tent knocking. It turns out to be a lots of Nazi soldiers, and they're saying, "You're going to perform for us." They don't want Olaf to be caught as a Black Hawk. So they put him up in clown makeup, and they say you're going to be part of the circus performance. During the when they're performing in front of the Nazis, there's a clown thing where Olaf ducks, and they have one of those tubes of water, and it accidentally hits the Nazi, and he gets all pissed off. So he's gonna take the clown that hit him with the water, which wasn't Olaf. Olaf was the guy that he was shooting the water at, and he ducked, and it hit the Nazi guy. They're gonna kill him because he wet the. And there's a little girl there that's one of the Nazi officers' daughters, and she's like, has a straight face, and she's like saying in German, I kind of like, this is stupid. I hate the circus, blah blah blah. But when she sees her father get soaked with the water, she thinks that's hysterical. She goes off and laughs, and then Olaf is left to save his clown buddy, which he ends up doing, and they capture the Nazis that are there. So yeah, that was pretty cool. The letters were not very great this one, but there was an interesting one from a guy that actually flies the planes, and he was saying that the designs of the aircraft that were used in Black Hawk were actually drawn really well because they were actual aircraft that were designed for the Air Force, but they weren't very functional for the Air Force. So they took those same planes and they refactored them somewhat to work for the Army. So I found that pretty interesting. But
Fun.
yeah, there's always something interesting to learn from the letters pages. And the last two ads are. I forgot about this entirely because I haven't seen it in a while. But when I was a kid, there was you had Peter Pan peanut butter, and you had Jif, and you had Superman peanut butter.
I don't
And
remember Superman.
I forgot that me and my parents would buy Superman peanut butter at the time. And
I don't
they had
remember
an ad
that.
for Mattel Electronics for the Atari 2600. This was M Network, and it was Bump and Jump, and I do remember this game. So I think I had that. And on the back they have an ad for Power Lords from Revell.
Oh, Power Lords, yes.
Yeah.
I remember those toys. They were kind of cheaply done.
Yeah, that was a comic too, right? Power
I think
Lords.
so,
Yeah.
yeah.
This was actually the toy, I guess, that inspired the comic book. They were probably
Interesting.
like the DC version of Rom the Space Knight, except Rom had a successful comic book and a failed toy. Well, in the case of Power Lords, they had a failed comic book and a failed toy.
You just never know.
Yeah, you never know what's gonna hit off, but
I
that's
mean,
all.
seriously, it's funny with the ROM. Like that was it, right? It was the one toy. There
Yeah,
wasn't
it
anything
was,
else
but
that
it was a
ROM, was there?
horrible fail of a toy.
But what were you supposed to do with it if there was nothing else
No, but
associated
the
with it?
comic became like a huge success. Like it
Oh,
sold a
well,
lot.
for sure. But like a lot of that stuff was like stuff that, who was writing ROM, like the Dire Wraiths and all that.
Yeah.
It's just strange that like they just came up with this one thing and like nothing surrounding it at the same
That would
time.
be a cool collected edition, if they could ever do it.
Oh, God,
But
for sure.
ROM is a hot mess, like Micronauts and some of those other properties. Atari Force.
They're so
We'll never see it.
intermingled.
Yeah. There's too many contractual things to make something reprinted for little
Yeah.
profit. Yeah. Kirk might
Even
buy like five
Godzilla
copies
is
of the hardcover, but that's still not enough to.
up.
Well, that's all
Well,
I had.
yeah, that's all that I had today.
Yep.
All right. Well, having said that, Happy New Year, everyone. I hope it's good to you. And you can reach us at Twitter at MythMakingETC, at Rob Krieger, and at Mike Myers Brunch. Our website is geekbrunchpodcast.com. You've been listening to Geek Brunch Retrocast. And you can follow us on Facebook if you choose to. You can follow the episode threads there. If you type in Geek Brunch Podcast, click the like button. You'll see all of the podcasts under Geek Brunch be posted there. So that's about it. We wrap this. This is the first episode of the new year. We're recording this on the second. And
Yes.
got lots more good comics coming to you. I've been basically picking comics out of this one box that I've Chris has probably seen it, but he doesn't. You know, I have that table right by the couch. There's three long boxes that have been there forever. And that's where I've been digging the Blackhawk and Green Lanterns and comics from. So I'll probably continue that path
Oh,
'cause it's
that's good.
so convenient. Yeah. And I haven't
Yeah,
read them
I do
before.
remember those.
Yeah.
I'll
All right. Well, you guys
probably
have a
look
good
through
one.
them. All right,
Yep.
you too. Happy
Happy
New
New
Year.
Year.
Happy New Year. Take care. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.